First Person is produced in cooperation with the Far East Broadcasting Company, who rejoice in the stories of changed lives through the power of Jesus Christ. Learn more at febc.org.
John Knox was motivated to boldness out of a genuine fear that he honor and reverence and give God his place. You know, so yes, bold, but not cocky.
Very glad to have you with us now for this edition of First Person as we're about to celebrate Reformation Day on the Christian calendar. Our guest is Pastor Robert Elliott, who will fill us in on one of the great leaders of the Reformation, John Knox. Just before we begin this week's interview, I'd like to welcome any new listeners to First Person who may be joining us. This program focuses on the lives of Christian believers, past and present, who have followed Christ leading in their lives. We hear life stories every week, and they encourage us in our spiritual walk as we pursue our own calling. We've archived hundreds of interviews, and you'll find them online at firstpersoninterview.com. Unfortunately, Halloween often eclipses Reformation Day in our minds, and we miss the great history of the Christian Church. Robert Elliott is the pastor of the Reformed Baptist Church in Riverside, California, and he joins us online today to talk about the life and ministry of John Knox, one of Scotland's great spiritual leaders. As we began, I said to Pastor Elliott, it's a shame we spend so little time thinking about Reformation Day.
Absolutely. I do agree with that. You know, it happens to be on Halloween, doesn't it?
Yes.
And that's one of the highlights of American culture. And right there, side by side, there's another day that in so many ways is responsible for shaping and molding the nation of America and the freedoms that we've enjoyed for all these centuries now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So we're going to try to overcome some of that here through this conversation, specifically around the personality of John Knox, which happens to fit nicely with your Scottish background. So let's talk first of all about the Reformation itself. It didn't begin in Scotland. Of course, it came to Scotland a bit later through Knox and others, but let's talk about where it began.
Well, it's one of those things that everybody will date it to 1517, you know, when Martin Luther nailed his thesis to the door in Wittenberg in Germany, the cathedral there. The fact is that prior to the Reformation, as we, you know, call it, starting in 1517, there were Reformation movements all across Europe, you know, right back into the 11th, 12th, 13th centuries in Britain. You had the Lollards with John Wycliffe. Names like Jan Hus or John Hus would come to mind as well there in Europe, where men just would go back to the Bible again and again. You know, they'd see the corruption that man brings, and they would say, wait a wee minute, we need to go back to the source. But then really in 1517, there was a local movement that God blessed and turned it into, a worldwide revival. Mm-hmm. And the essence of it was sola scriptura. Let's get back to God's word. Enough of the added stuff, enough of the nonsense that eventually men bring in, you know, just because that's who we are. And let's get back to the scripture. So the root of what we call the Reformation, Martin Luther, Germany, 1517. But there were a few Scotsmen went over there fairly early on. One was a young man called Patrick Hamilton, went over to see what was happening in Germany. And he brought that back. He brought the sola scriptura back to Scotland. And sadly, he was burned at the stake long before John Knox was ever a Christian.
Hmm. And then Geneva figures into this too, of course, John Calvin.
Yeah, Calvin and Knox ended up being really good friends. And there was times when Knox would go over there, you know, minister alongside Calvin, specifically to the English-speaking exiles who had left England, Scotland, because of the pressure the Christians were under. And they would actually minister side by side. And can you imagine in Geneva if you could speak both French and English on a Sunday morning, standing outside these two churches and thinking to yourself, who am I going to go and hear this morning, John Knox or John Calvin? How would you make that decision? I don't know.
Oh, that would be a difficult one indeed. All right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Scotland before we talk more about John Knox. Talk about the monarchy there in Scotland, about the culture that existed prior to Knox's ministry.
I think that's an excellent question, brother, because Scotland was pre-Reformation one of the most spiritually and economically poorest of places. The church was just utterly corrupt. The priesthood could get away with doing whatever they wanted. In fact, the priests were typically also the politicians. You know, they had legal authority, they had political influence, and then they had the ecclesiastical power. And it made them cruel and immoral. And the people were generally illiterate. So anything could be taught to them and they wouldn't know. So superstition and fear was the order of the day, keeping people's consciences bound and dark, you know. And then economically, the people of Scotland were just a sad bunch of people. You know, they lived in little crofts, as we call them. So a croft is a little tiny farmhouse with maybe a half acre, an acre of land. And it's not necessarily good land, but you really have to just eke out a living on that. And it's often peaty soil, which is great in the winter. You cut the peat, dry it, and you've got heat. But it's not great for growing anything. So the people were poor. And the average Scotsman, I think this is an interesting fact, just prior to the Reformation, the average Scotsman made his living by being a mercenary. That was all that they could do. They would go off to Europe and they'd fight in other people's wars for money. And that was how they made a living. And of course, that meant family life was completely disintegrated because dads would go and die. And those that didn't die, they were away. You know, and then young boys grew up with no men in the home. You can just imagine. So it was a dark little country spiritually and economically, a sad little place, and just incredible how God chose to take such a backwater and turn it into a powerhouse for gospel truth.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know, and I'm so glad to have you join us today to talk about these things. In this this culture, then, there is a monarch, and it's Mary, Queen of Scots. She came to the throne as a baby, didn't she?
Yeah. So actually, she was later, if you know what I mean. She comes when Knox is at his pinnacle.
Oh, okay. All right.
Prior to her was her mother, and we call her Mary of Guise. It looks like Guise, G-U-I-S-E. So most English speakers say Mary of Guise, but Mary of Guise is the... Well, I was taught that's the proper pronunciation, so I just do what I'm told, you know?
Yeah, and this has nothing to do with English monarchy at all.
No, no. This is so back in this day, we're talking now early 16th century, you know, that when Martin Luther was nailing the thesis to the door in Wittenberg Cathedral in Germany, Scotland and England were absolutely at odds with one another, and Scotland's alliance was with France. Because England had become quite quickly, and you know, soon after 1517, England started to embrace Reformation principles through Henry VIII. But Scotland made an alliance with France, and we still call that in Scotland the Old Alliance. And it was really in order to sustain the Catholic Church, you know, against what was happening in England under Henry VIII. So prior to Mary, Queen of Scots, we had Mary of Guise. And then when Knox, you know, is coming back to Scotland, and there's a lot that we could talk about happens before he comes back to Scotland as an older man, really. He must have been about, in his late 40s, the time he comes back to Scotland. Then Mary, Queen of Scots, arrives. And one of the most interesting rivalries begins. It's actually fascinating. If you want, we can talk about that in a wee minute or two.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant rivalry.
There was a dramatic change in Scotland then, largely because of Knox. There must have been others as well, though. It really took the place of the Catholic Church, didn't it? It overcame Catholicism.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I grew up to hear that Scotland was called the mother of the Reformation. So as a little boy, I was, you know, I thought of Scotland as the mother of the Reformation. Then as I started reading, I discovered, hold on a wee minute, it was Germany, and then it was Switzerland, and then it was Scotland. Why are we the mother of the Reformation? And my understanding is that Scotland was given that title, if you like, because of the way that the whole country embraced the gospel, as opposed to in Switzerland, it was cantons and cities. Germany, it was regions and cities. This was a unique situation where a whole nation turned around, and actually the gospel was embraced, the Bible was given a place of respect and authority, and the Catholic Church was largely diminished, you know. So the changes were massive, so much so that what then grew out of the Reformation was called the Scottish Enlightenment. And it was the principles of the Scottish Enlightenment that the founding fathers of this country looked to and drew from. And issues such as capitalism, even things like healthcare, a philosophy that would advance scientific and, you know, discovery and promotion, all of these things, and especially the idea of the separation of church and state, that all came from the Scottish Enlightenment that was the product in society of the Reformation. So Scotland, from being a little backwater with illiteracy abounding, it became a hub and really the birthplace of the American idea, in essence.
We'll continue this conversation with Pastor Robert Elliott about John Knox and the Scottish Reformation coming up in a moment.
Hi, I'm Ed Cannon, and as you know, situations around the world are changing quickly. Stay current with FEBC's ministry and get a deeper understanding of people who need to find hope. Hear how you can feel the pulse of God's Spirit moving through the hearts of believers dedicated to reaching the lost. Be sure you join me for the podcast Until All Have Heard.
Discover how the gospel is making a difference around the world. Search for Until All Have Heard on your favorite podcast platform or hear it online at febc.org. My guest is Pastor Robert Elliott. Robert is pastor of Reformed Baptist Church in Riverside, California. I have a friend who's I think on staff of the church there, Troy,
yeah,
I believe.
One of my fellow pastors.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for Troy introducing us, but I wanted to contact you because it's Reformation time and an opportunity for us to not neglect the heritage that we have as Protestants. And it stands, of course, on the shoulders of people like John Knox. So let's go back to Knox for a moment. He made his way from Geneva back to Scotland, and really over the years things began to change. But then Mary Queen of Scots never really accepted the Protestant religion, did she? She remained Catholic.
Yes, she did. She was a very bold young lady. You know, the Protestants in Scotland caricature her, and the Catholics in Scotland caricature John Knox.
Okay.
And I'm sure that somewhere the truth is in the middle. But, you know, she was nevertheless a confident young woman who had this history and the idea that the monarch was the supreme being, and that there was God, and then the monarch, and then everybody else under them. And John Knox obviously understood that very differently. And he lived a mile from her, literally up the hill. And regularly he would be invited down, in her mind, to be chastised and to be brought, you know, to toe the line. But in John Knox's mind, it was just an opportunity to preach the gospel.
Yeah, he wasn't about to cave in, was he?
For sure, bro. And the records of their conversation, I used to have it memorized. There was different seasons and different conversations they had that I could, you know, quote back in the day. I forget it now mostly because I'm getting old. But, you know, she would basically be pleading with him that, you know, the church is under her authority. And he would point out, look, just as the Jews knew truth but crucified Christ, so those who say they know truth today can still be crucifying Christ, you know. And she would say things like, are you saying that that you would encourage the people to disobey me, the monarch? And he would say, look, if children are being killed and abused by their father, it's right for them to hold their father and to imprison him. And just as that's right, so it's right for the people who are being killed and abused by a monarch to resist the monarch. And
boy,
she would go into fits of tears.
That didn't go over well at all.
She'd never heard this before.
No,
This was unheard of ideas, you know. Americans talk this way all the time now, you know, and they think it's the way it's always been. But when Knox would speak that way, it would literally blow her mind and she would be stunned into tears and silence, you know.
So in John Knox, we have an example of boldness for the gospel, don't we? Is that how you would characterize him?
I would characterize him that way, yes.
Tell me more about him.
Right, I would say this, that it would probably be better for us to think of Knox as a man who was afraid before we think of him as a man who was bold. Now, what do you mean by that? He was a man filled with a sense of the fear of God.
Ah, okay.
Now, a healthy fear, not the kind of fear that causes one to run away and hide, but the sort of fear that causes one to realize, look, this is God, and he has spoken, and it matters not then what other people have said and what other people expect. So John Knox was motivated to boldness out of a genuine fear that he honor and reverence and give God his place, you know. So yes, bold, but not cocky. They portray him as arrogant because they don't understand it. But when you read his sermons, you know, Banner of Truth recently published the works of John Knox. It's 6 volumes. I wouldn't recommend everybody to get it because a lot is in old Scots, and I can hardly even read it.
Yeah, that'd be an adventure, right?
It really is. It's hard going, but you really get a sense of a man who humbly wanted to honor the Lord and submit to his word. And so God put him in a position where he was leading a movement that brought him into contact with the monarch. And in that sense, he became bold and he was fearless.
Yeah. So bring us to the end of his days. What was that like for John Knox?
Well, interestingly, we think of John Knox as a man who ministered in Scotland, right? The truth of the matter is he was only in Scotland in his younger days when he was a Roman Catholic, when he was a new convert. And as a new convert, he became a bodyguard to George Wishart, who was a reformer prior to him. But when Knox got saved and then he entered into the ministry, it was in St. Andrew's Castle. And almost around that same time, Cardinal Beaton, the Catholic cardinal, who was a very corrupt man, he was murdered by the men of St. Andrew's Castle. And the French came and took John Knox away as a galley slave. So here he is as an adult man in his 40s, and he's a galley slave for 18 months.
Wow.
And he's getting treated like dirt. You know, he was the engine below deck that was powering the French galley ship.
Sure.
And he was barely fed. He was sick, and he battled on. He did that for 18 months. He refused to bow to the idols. There's a story of a little image of Mary being put before him, and he's told to kiss it, and he took it, threw it into the sea, and he said, "She's light enough, let the lady learn to swim and save herself." And then he would say that after doing that, no Scotsman ever again was asked to reverence the idols. So he lived in that context for 18 months. He then came back to Scotland, but really it was England, as in the very north of England, but he had a lot of relationships just across the border. And then he went down to London, and he spent some time in London as one of the chaplains for King Edward VI, under the leadership of Archbishop Thomas Cranmer. And then he had to flee England, but not back to Scotland. This is why he went to France, and then Germany, and then Geneva, where he would be with Calvin. And all of that was because Bloody Mary came to the throne in England, Mary Tudor. And she's called Bloody Mary because multitudes were martyred under her. She was a Roman Catholic, and she killed many, many of the reformers, burned them, especially in London. So Knox is basically, let me see, he's about, it's 1559 before he actually gets back to Scotland. And he only has 13 years now left. Of course, he didn't know that. But his last 13 years of his life were the years that we speak about when we hear about Knox saying, give me Scotland or I die. Mm-hmm. You know, when we hear about Knox saying that every parish should have a church and a school, we would say a kirk and a school, every parish. Hence, the illiteracy is turned around, the ignorance, the superstition is pushed aside, and Scotland in that 13-year period was radically transformed, and then the foundations were laid, you know, for later reformers and, you know, the church. And he also, during that 13 years, established the Presbyterian Church. There's a little chapel in the heart of Edinburgh called the Magdalen Chapel, and you can go in there, and that's where the first presbytery of the Presbyterian Church ever took place, and John Knox was there. So he did a lot in 13 years. Between his lively debates with Mary and other things, he managed to accomplish an awful lot in Scotland over those last 13 years.
Amazing story. Amazing man. How should we be observing Reformation Day in our churches now?
The heart of the Reformation was, you know, back to the Bible. As much as I would like people to talk about Martin Luther and John Knox, you know, and Ulrich Zwingli and the other reformers, which I think historically, if you want your kids to have a rounded education, introduce them to these men and the influences they had. So yeah, that's nice, that's good, that's profitable, but we actually need the heart of the message once again. You know, we can't look at these things historically and think, well, that's all quaint and interesting. We look at it and say, oh no, we're in trouble. The word of God has been forsaken. Men are putting their opinions and their own thoughts before biblical truth. And if the church, to observe the Reformation, would resolve to get back to the Bible, that would be the healthiest thing that we could do on Reformation Sunday.
Our guest has been Pastor Robert Elliott of the Reformed Baptist Church, located in Riverside, California. I so appreciate his filling us in on some of the details of John Knox's life in the Reformation, specifically as it affected Scotland. This interview will be archived along with all of our past programs at firstpersoninterview.com. I'm grateful to the Far East Broadcasting Company for the support which makes presenting these interviews possible each week. FEBC is a broadcast ministry which uses various forms of radio and new media to declare the gospel throughout the nations. We're committed to reaching difficult areas with a message of Christ and training indigenous leaders. You can learn more about this ministry affecting 50 nations of the world and beyond at febc.org. Now, with thanks to my friend and producer, Joe Carlson, I'm Wayne Shepherd. Join us next time for First Person.